Welcome to the 10X Total Health Podcast, hosted by Gabriel Eichler and Mark Redless. We're so excited to bring you our unique perspective on all things that we come across changing and, more importantly, radically improving the healthcare landscape. The show notes will be made available to anyone interested on our website at 10xtotalpodcast.com. That's 10xtotalpodcast.com. To learn more about me and or Gabriel, please visit our website. If you have an idea for a great guest, a transformative company, or a leader, please drop us a line. We look forward to hearing from you. Now, as my favorite podcaster says, without further ado, please enjoy this very fun and interesting inaugural episode of the 10X Total Health Podcast. All right. Welcome to the podcast. This is going to be quite an adventure. I'm Mark Redless.
And I'm Gabriel Eichler.
All right. Well, we're going to introduce one another because we think that that's probably the best way to do this. It'll be more interesting that way. I'm sure there'll be added color. and we'll then talk a little bit about what we're going to do on this introductory podcast that's going to serve as our baseline before guests start arriving. And we do this.
Episode one.
Whoa. Okay. It's a lot of pressure. Episode one's always a strong prequel. Okay. So it's hard to do it after that, but this is funnier this way. Dr. Gabriel Eichler. Let's talk about Gabriel for a second. Dr. Gabriel Eichler is a workstream lead at the Kraft Precision Medicine Accelerator at Harvard Business School. He's also the founder and managing director of Oak Health Partners, a boutique consulting firm focused on data and technology strategy. More than 20 years ago, Gabriel, who is originally from the Boston area, came down to Philadelphia where he earned his bachelor's in computer science from the University of Pennsylvania. He completed his PhD in bioinformatics from his research at Harvard Medical School, Boston University, and the National Cancer Institute. He has been consulting to and serving life science and healthcare organizations for nearly 15 years, including working at McKinsey, Patients Like Me, GNS Healthcare, and several others. I would consider him one of the certified smart guys that I know. I know he loves when I say that. He's also an experienced speaker, having delivered over 100 lectures globally and authored over 40 peer-reviewed manuscripts. I'm just thinking back to this is perfect for the podcast. Thinking about when we originally did your intro, 1,000 lectures globally. So only 100 for Gabriel in this particular bio.
That's called 10X right there.
10X. He 10Xs his lectures and authored over 40 peer-reviewed manuscripts and 2 book chapters on a wide array of healthcare technology domains. Okay, I'll make it. He also co-hosts another podcast at Harvard Business School, which will not be as good as this one, I'm sure.
It's called Under the Data Scope.
Oh, there you go. Oh, perfect. I honestly really excited to get to do this show with you, Gabriel. So this is a lot of fun.
Mark, it's a real tremendous honor and pleasure to be here with you to record this. Let me introduce you if I can. So Mark Redless is the Chief Executive Officer at Tritium, a digital behavioral health technology company based in Philadelphia, where we are recording this today. Products aimed at 10Xing patient and provider experiences that overall improve the health and wellness of patients. You can find out more about Tritium at tritium.com. That's Tritium, T-R-I-D-I-U-U-M.com. And I'll add my personal twist here, which is that Mark, I find to be a visionary leader who reimagines how healthcare and technology can work together. And it's always an inspiration to sit and hear from you, Mark, about the kind of things you think about. I don't know where you get your inspiration, but I have to say it's quite impressive.
Wow. I really feel like I like undershot on yours then. But thank you. If, in case you guys out there aren't getting this, we obviously enjoy spending time with one another, and this will be as much fun, probably more fun for us than it will be for you. You'll be thinking, what are these guys talking about? Does it even make any sense? So, we'll probably tag team here a little bit, talking about what this podcast is going to be about. So it's really organized around 10Xing what healthcare, the experience and innovation is for patients, but also for providers and really all the aspects of a system
administrators, other stakeholders that are involved. We're interested in breakthroughs in that area. And it doesn't have to be just technology. It could be process innovation as it pertains to healthcare. But I don't know, Gabriel, if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, I think right now there exists a gap between the technology innovators of the classic tech sector and the practicalities and realities of implementing healthcare technology, because it's very hard to put technology to work on massive, complex populations and in really complicated care settings. And I think that that gap is one that we want to explore and codify and understand and ultimately help other innovators improve how they address through the technologies that they're trying to bring to market.
Yeah, really well said. I think, you know, both Gabriel and I have an incredibly unique privilege, I think, to get to work with, work alongside of and serve various stakeholders in this kind of healthcare ecosystem. And we definitely have different takes on those experiences and what's working, what isn't working. And really getting to talk to a lot of folks that are working hard on hard problems. I think healthcare is a hard problem in and of itself, but I think it's really interesting to see how people are thinking through what is a really kind of, I love this phrase, like eight-dimensional chess game is what it feels like sometimes working out there. People are like, oh, you're not rocket scientists. Well, have you ever been in healthcare? Because it feels like you're a rocket scientist when you're functioning in this environment. It's complicated. So we're going to talk a lot about that. And the guests that we have on, you know, I think we're going to try to have a unique guest on every 2 weeks. We'll try to release these every 2 weeks from various health systems, technology companies, experts, innovators that are working on these problems, and most importantly, that are having an outsized impact on the population and patient health out there and that experience. So today's kind of just an introduction on a Get to Know Us podcast with a couple of jumping off discussion points that we'll kind of riff on. That'll give you an idea thematically about what we're thinking about and the work we're doing. It's always good to, while we're not trying to discourage anybody from listening to this, if you're, you know, a musician and you want to hear this, that's great. But, we kind of put together an ideal audience for the podcast. If you're a healthcare executive, a digital health innovator, a product manager for software or technology, consultant, subject matter expert, policymaker, investor, or just a budding entrepreneur who's trying to break into this, I think there'll be something for everybody, at least from episode to episode in this. And hopefully you'll get to sit in on some of the very cool conversations that Gabriel and I have every week. You should get the general sense of how much really we enjoy talking with one another and working on super challenging problems. We do talk outside of this podcast probably a couple times a week. I know it's surprising, we're thinking about things. Gabriel's thinking about things in artificial intelligence and data science that can really move the needle on outcomes. He's working across a variety of disease categories, and while he works with me in behavioral health stuff, he works across a lot of stuff that I'm sure is going to come up as we go through this. So.
And I think, Mark, your experience about launching products into mature care settings and trying to innovate on and replace broken care systems with technology-enabled systems is really a set of experiences I want to learn and hear from you about, because you've been doing that more than anybody else I know, candidly, in terms of rolling these technologies out so nationally and so impressively at large scales. So that's going to be great.
Yeah. Well, thanks. It is going to be great. We're going to have a good time. So with that, we've introduced ourselves, talked a little about what we're going to do here. Maybe we'll hit a couple of jumping off points. Somehow we're going to fit in his Peloton into this conversation, because I'm always curious about
it. Brings up wellness right next to health as wellness.
So proactive. You're right ahead on everything. You want to see the coolest technology? It's staying ahead with Peloton. Maybe we'll get them as a sponsor. Okay. So
let's just go and say this podcast brought to you by Peloton.
We just did it. Not monetizable. Okay. We're going to keep going. So I think, you know, to start, we had a lot of cool topics that we were doing in our test podcast that were really interesting and fun to do. A couple of these we can pick on. I just mentioned AI. and we just came from a lovely lunch meeting with an area academic healthcare institution, talking about research and things like that. A lot of curiosity around AI and healthcare, talking about programming for next year and some plenary sessions and things like that. So, you know, you have a front row seat with what you're doing at Harvard, looking at AI. And how are you, or I should say, how are you, what are you seeing that's really blowing your mind right now in AI in healthcare, if anything?
Well, I'll tell you something that I've been observing, which is interesting. So, you know, we often have this sort of classic hype cycle curve where things go from an initial technology to a mature technology over the course of, you know, between 6 months and 6 years, right? But typically it's in the years, multi-years. And what I've found in watching this whole segment and sector is that where AI has been able to actually prove its value and integrate into existing workflows, it just takes off and no one thinks twice about it. So what I think about, for example, is pathology, or more like radiology imaging and image analysis. And that, you know, there's been a few awkward years in there about how does the thing actually work and where does it fit into workflows and what do docs think about it and what about liability and all these challenges. But I feel like the head start on that space is so far out there now for the companies that have been investing in this for years that they are really, really far along on this process of building industrial strength, commercializable AI for the replacement of conventional pathology workflows. That, you know, it's, you know, just taking the world by storm. And, you know, it was one of these area academics that shared with me a slide of Wile E. Coyote already over the edge of a cliff, but hadn't fallen yet. You know, one of those classic cartoon scenes. And that's the way some people are viewing radiology now, is that this AI is, you know, out of the, we're in the uncharted territory, and we're never going to go back to a non-AI enabled world in pathology and or radiology. And it's going to be interesting to watch how it matures and really takes flight over these next few years. And I know inside the big medical imaging companies, they're wondering too, where do they put this? Does it sit in the software stack? Does it sit in the PACS image analysis? Does it sit on the machine itself, the hardware? And these are massive questions, which I think are going to be defining in the next coming months.
I was going to ask you, like, the timeline as far as uptake goes and mainstreaming that. I mean, you're seeing kind of the front end of the curve a bit, but you feel like the front end is moving pretty fast.
Faster than I've ever seen it move. I mean, it's kind of consistent agreement that this stuff is as good as humans. It's cheaper than humans. It's going to potentially just change workflows dramatically, right? And, you know, some may think that this may be transparent to a patient, but the fact now that you can have a queue of images that need to be read by a clinician that get prioritized by an AI approach that says, well, these are the likely positives we need the human to sign off on first. These ones are less likely to be positive, and therefore, you know, it's the less acute situation for those patients, so we can delay the reading of those images, right? So it's a fascinating, or even just the workflows, right? I mean, you know, typically patients get sort of multiple images have to get taken for a patient, in part because the image, the first one comes out wrong. And so if you actually have AI feedback built into the system so that you interrupt the image taking process to say the data coming off this device is not of high enough quality to be acceptable, rotate the patient or change the approach or change the parameters of the image acquisition process, this can vastly improve the throughput of what a machine can do, because now you can get 25 patients on a machine in a day versus, you know, 15, right? And so image acquisition is much faster usage of, you know, a flow of patients through that clinic, right? Less waiting times, cheaper, you know, use of these machines because they get utilized over more patients and more tests. So, you know, it can change profoundly all sorts of implications on how even just imaging is done.
Do you, you know, as a jump off, you know, and kind of rolling it back to my world that I know certainly far better than the diverse set of, you know, areas that you spend a lot of time in or observing, it seems like there's a couple of different really interesting subcategories within AI in each kind of discrete either service area or what have you in healthcare. But a common theme is, you know, is there an insight component to AI where it just better at discovering things that are going on with patients or even at population levels? Is there a, you know, there's obviously a workflow aspect to AI that is really blowing efficiency into the system, which has its own really, as you said, positive repercussions that are going to reverberate. What do you think the lowest hanging fruit AI applications are really good at right now, as opposed to, you know, the hope of AI?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I was sitting down with a major pharmaceutical company's AI leadership team. And, you know, these guys are top five, sort of most respected in the space. And I was asking, where are you guys applying AI? And they said manufacturing, right? So sometimes the low-hanging fruit and the clearly most ROI positive investments are the stuff that's already being done, you think is pretty efficient, but ultimately the optimization of manufacturing flows is a tremendous opportunity in the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah.
Okay. But you know, where I think it's really interesting, Mark, candidly, is, and this isn't necessarily low-hanging fruit, but really interesting, is there are places where having a human intelligence in a system isn't scalable. Yet there's places where an AI could be inserted because it's practically marginal, cost zero, to improve a workflow in the middle of that workflow. So let's just take your innovation on patient intake at a behavioral health clinic or in a patient population that's trying to be assessed for behavioral health needs. The ability to, using computational and digital technologies, potentially even AI, assess that patient at that instant without a human, a trained human, needing to be part of the process is profound, because now you can have untrained front of office type staff members evaluating a patient using a tool like this. Back of the eye imaging, same thing, right? Patients that are at risk of diabetic retinopathy of the eye, where you get nerve damage and go blind from diabetes. These images can be taken off of a machine and analyzed with AI to determine how much that disease pathology may be how the disease pathology may be established in that patient's eye, and the risk of that patient getting blind or having complications from this, all done by AI. That's really, really powerful to me, you know, because it wouldn't make sense that at every PCP's office you have an ophthalmologist. Clearly nobody would ever think about that. But now we can screen every diabetes patient coming through a clinic because we have an AI-enabled sort of mini doc, if you will.
Yeah. No, it feels like, I mean, the stuff we're working on with you, while it's more advanced than screening, screening feels like a really powerful place where AI can just get things filtered down to a spot where you can make the best use of a clinician's time.
Yeah.
It just feels like the easiest thing in the world to get ahead of that. If you can get pattern recognition down, if you can have an active learning system, deep learning system, where it's getting smarter and smarter, like we're trying to do in behavioral health, I think that seems like a great utility for that.
But you know, it's funny because good AI requires good input data, both to train and then to be applied to. And I kind of think of AI as like a Formula One engine, right? You need extremely refined fuels that are just the right chemical mixture and a consistent mixture in order to make that engine run optimally. And if you start throwing some other fuel into that engine, you're going to get all sorts of odd effects and odd performance. You may not even be able to predict what those are. So let's just take, you know, a patient who has to sprint to get to their physician's office for their doctor's visit. They get brought into the exam room because they're 5 minutes late, but fortunately they get seen. They get sat down at the table, and the first thing they do is get their blood pressure taken. If we don't have a human involved to say, well, I wouldn't really trust this blood pressure reading because this patient was 5 minutes late and had to sprint here to get into this
context.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, if that context is missing, and so the real world is messy.
Yeah.
And in AI, we don't really have enough data yet and know how to deal with the messiness of the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So another low-hanging fruit dimension, which I think is key, is where are the places where we can make a really clean environment in which AI can be applied.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, rolling off of AI for a second and talking, you know, I think AI is obviously a breakthrough innovation area in healthcare and in across many sectors, not just healthcare, but certainly interesting application there. The other thing we talked about, again, in our test podcast, which I thought was really fun and interesting to talk about, was this move of big tech coming into healthcare, the role of big tech, integrated delivery networks, risk, patient wellness, getting ahead of the game in some of these cases. We chatted about, I think your question was, what would it be like? I mean, I'm sure you can remember this question, but it was something to the effect of, what would it be like if we could have a health system that didn't have any new boundaries, like could leverage technology in the optimal way? It didn't have anything impairing it. Just wasn't shackled to today's constraints.
Well, that's interesting, right? If you think about it, value-based care, people always look at it as a way of saving on cost and providing, people talk about it being a riper, more fertile space for innovation, right? But just imagine how much we could close that gap that currently exists between consumer tech and health tech. Mm-hmm. If we have now hundreds of potential experimental environments where clinicians that are, or thousands of these experimental environments where clinicians are wanting to innovate on how to bring tech into their care delivery experience and process, how big tech can work with them or build networks of them to experiment for these things, and how much better we could get at vastly and rapidly changing the technology footprint of tech and healthcare, right? And that's really profoundly exciting, but I think that this is an aspect of value-based care which we don't necessarily put a value on. And I don't think that,
I mean, being able to innovate rapidly.
Rapidly.
Yeah.
And be able to be much more agile with our innovation, mm-hmm. because it's not so much about who's getting paid. It's fundamentally a physician believes that they can improve a patient experience or outcome by the use of some technology in that process. And that physician is enabled and empowered to go do that because they're not waiting for an insurance company to pay for it. They're able to fund or work on
or an IRB or just a lot of research structure to it.
Well, right. You can fall off the horse both ways. Mm-hmm. We want to have reasonable patient protections.
Of course.
Right. Yeah. I would hate to know my PCP says, well, you can drive to the hospital, not take an ambulance because we're doing a study about how much we can save if we do that. Right.
Right. Right.
That would not be satisfying.
No.
Right. But at the same hand, what's the right balance there to enable the distributed rapid innovation that distributed environment can provide, but also the reasonable safeguards?
You know, you just like stimulated about five different questions in my brain there. And I'll just pick off the one that surfaced to the top first. But, you know, with research, and this is something we've struggled with at Trinium, which is this idea that about a year or two ago, and this is in no way meant to denigrate the NIHs and the grant mechanisms out there, but we kind of just got the mindset that, you know, grant funding was just too slow and it couldn't keep up with our product innovations and our ability to impact patient well-being, actually impact outcomes. What's your thinking? I mean, you just talked about being agile. What's your feeling about research, formal research processes and procedures? What's tech's role in that? You know, thinking of Apple Research Kit and other things like that. But how do those two worlds kind of function in this really accelerating, tech digital health kind of landscape right now, where people can make incredible improvements to products? We do that. We make incredible improvements to our products in 6 months, 9 months, way under the time that a phase two RCT, would be done, grant-funded RCT. That's a randomized control trial for those of you playing at home. But, it just doesn't work for what we're trying to accomplish as a commercial entity, but also if you're trying to do good, where's research play in that? That was a really long question lead up, but do you have any reaction to that?
It's a good question. I think that You know, I think that this plays into the translational gap that a lot of digital companies, digital health companies fall into, right? Of this gap of, okay, I've solved this technology problem. Now I need to prove it works and make it work at scale so that healthcare can adopt my brilliance and my innovation. And that this gap of getting hard data on the benefits and value of these innovations is fundamentally important to this. You know, this is the last mile in the manufacturing line of innovation that we hope to be building in digital health. Question. And how are we going to do that? I mean, how are we going to build the translational engines that we need in healthcare to enable this type of innovation to happen smoothly and efficiently, right?
Yeah.
But Mark, you know, I have an observation for you. I'm curious your thoughts on this, right? So people often talk about this gap between consumer healthcare, consumer tech and healthcare tech, mm-hmm. right? And how just typically cruddy and poorly designed most tech is in healthcare. And I'm kind of reminded of the fact that healthcare as a system tries to serve the entirety of the population it serves. And that, you know, you have high socioeconomic folks, low socioeconomic folks. You have people who are quite well and healthy, all the people who are at death's door. You have able-bodied people, you have disabled people, and all sorts of disabilities, not just physical impairment, but also emotional and mental impairment, you know, cognitive impairment. So the challenge that I see is that we already know cell phone adoption is, you know, 90%, but it's not 100%. We already know that probably, I'd guess, 70% of Americans use Amazon, right? But it's not 100%. Whereas healthcare has a standard it sets itself to, which is to serve 100% of patients. And we kind of need that. It's a universal system that needs to be universally accessible. And if you were to build a hospital and say, yeah, we just cater to people who can walk into our clinics. We don't even have ramps in the front. Or we have a hospital, only people who can pay cash. Even those do exist, but they're rare. So how much do you think that innovation in healthcare is sort of slowed down by the fact that we need something that is so robust to such a diverse population that it serves? Versus the consumer tech side, Amazon's plenty happy to serve those 70% that can use their quality product and ignore the other 30% simply because they can get away with that.
Yeah, wow, that's an awesome question. This is why Gabriel is on the co-host in this podcast, because he asks awesome questions. I don't know if I have a real great answer other than to say that our VP of Clinical Science at Tritium, Dr. Tina Harrelson, is very, very interested in trying to find ways to get our product into what would be the socioeconomically kind of disenfranchised. And we've had a lot of conversations about homelessness and folks that are, you know, seemingly without any kind of you know, wherewithal to basically live and live and work. And Tina's famous for saying, I'm attributing this to Tina. Hopefully she'll laugh when she hears this on the podcast. But she's like, but everybody has a cell phone. Everybody. People that are homeless have cell phones. And that's still not everybody, obviously. That's, you know, you have age demographics in there. You've got lots of other types of challenges. But the phone is a really important part, I think, of the future of healthcare. And I think a lot of the folks that are working on it from a consumer tech standpoint that are migrating into healthcare. We talked about in our test podcast, Apple's doing this. You know, Apple's not exactly the harbinger or the purveyor of really affordable technology for everybody. But, you know, they have a significant interest, which will kind of raise all ships, I think, in the healthcare tech space. There's a real movement towards how do we get patients engaged, people engaged, kind of as close to them as possible. And I think the phone is a big part of that. And so, you know, even with what we're doing in our tech, you know, the further we move along our product roadmap, the closer and closer we get not only to the phone, but to on the person, and thinking about technology closer and closer in proximity to a human being. And that allows us, but it also allows other companies out there in the digital health sector that are thinking like this to have a more nuanced approach to, yeah, there's probably, you know, you could stratify a patient population 100 different ways or at least. And so you have to build technology that can flex and pivot and anticipate a little bit about what each of those strata kind of need and want and can react to and respond to. So I think that this is, you know, it's, I don't know if it was a clever idea of yours, but it's a great way to go back to the AI part of this conversation, which is AI has a big role in, I think, creating a deeper, more nuanced relationship between a very heterogeneous population and their technology and healthcare. And I think that's one of the big things that we're trying to do or think about is incorporating that into being proactive and looking at that and taking those inputs that are, you know, from different demographic, you know, segments and trying to understand that. And also obviously different levels of acuity and a certain disease. You've got so many permutations that are going on there. So I didn't really answer your question, but I think we're thinking about that stuff. I mean, might we capture 80%, 85% of people with what we're doing? It's possible. 100%, I think, is the great goal. But I think as we get smarter, as technology gets smarter, as technology helps us get smarter, I think we can move the needle along that 80, 85% to 90% and beyond. So that's kind of my thought.
Yeah, and it raises the question, I mean, for a socioeconomically disadvantaged population, the time it takes to get to a hospital means not putting in the hours you need into your hourly wage. It means, you know, finding a parking space near a hospital, which is never easy. You really, for people living paycheck to paycheck, that's incredibly hard to take off that time to take care of themselves. And the prospect of extending care through digital tools or telehealth or other types of virtual care opportunities is actually really exciting, because this could actually extend care to those who wouldn't show up to a hospital for a diabetes screening or for a behavioral health consult, which sort of is a little bit less required of them because it's not something acute, but would be a good thing to be doing if they could manage their care, because now they could do it virtually.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's really cool.
I think knowing no boundaries, we talked about that in our lunch meeting a little bit, like, you know, hospitals without boundaries, I think is where you're getting care and you're almost agnostic into what the delivery mechanism of that is. I mean, that's probably its own podcast, and we'll probably have some guests on that we can talk a little bit about, you know, no waiting rooms, no boundaries. Look forward to doing that. But
that'd be great.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. So I think we're kind of come up on 35 minutes, and I think our goal, we didn't say this outside, is to have like 30 to 35 minute or so episodes. This is our first one, so forgive us for going over a little bit, but anything else you want to add before we kind of hang up the mic?
It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and I'm looking forward to our future conversations. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us and giving us this 30 minutes.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. If you enjoyed it, just send us a note. We'd certainly like to hear that. We'll have something to take notes from shortly, and look forward to interacting with all of you and getting your feedback. So thanks, Gabriel, for doing this. This is a lot of fun.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right,
see ya. Thanks again to everyone who just sat through our inaugural 10X Total Health podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please feel free to drop us a line via our website, 10xtotalpodcast.com. That's 10xtotalpodcast.com, or email either of us at gabriel@10xtotalpodcast.com or mark@10xtotalpodcast.com. We'd love to hear your feedback. Without our listeners, we're just two guys having an interesting conversation, which is pretty much how this whole thing got started anyway. Please stay tuned for upcoming guests across the healthcare delivery, product, and investing spectrum. This should be a really great ride, and we hope that you join us. Thanks.